We are grateful for the news update there on the half hour, and happy to jump right back into it here on this Saturday. Beautiful day, by the way. We're looking for highs today in the lower 60s. Tomorrow, that'll increase to the upper 60s. And don't forget, the greenhouse is on the road today with our friends at J&J Garden Center. So Tawn and Maria will be on the road with some good things for you coming up starting at 8 o'clock. Right now, our guest, however, is Nate Owens, an aquatic invasive species coordinator for the Division of Wildlife Resources. I said aquatic invasive species coordinator, but it would be the only one in the state, right?
Yeah, thanks, Tim. Happy to be here.
Nice to have you. We're going to talk Lake Powell here for a little bit, and people may know if they've tried to get their boats down to Lake Powell in the last couple of weeks that they're not being allowed on the water. That ban went into effect, what was it, first week of the month, wasn't it?
Yeah, April 6th at 5 p.m.
So the word then followed that anybody that had had their boat in the water between the 1st and the 6th of this month needed to go through a 30-day mandatory dry time. Tell us what's going on.
Yeah, Tim. So obviously right now the COVID-19 is kind of changing life as we know it, and that our AIS program is no exception. Our watercraft inspectors are still needed out there doing their work, ensuring that quagga mussels are not transported from one water body to another, and that definitely includes Lake Powell. Based on exit inspection protocols for boats leaving Lake Powell, our staff are typically put into close proximity with the boaters, both through the inspection and decontamination processes. And doing so, that would violate some of the social distancing guidelines put forward by the Centers for Disease Control. And obviously, public health is a big priority for us, and we didn't want to put anyone in jeopardy, the public nor our staff. And so we ceased doing our normal watercraft inspections and decontaminations at Lake Powell, but in doing so, we needed some way to help assure that those boats were not going to be transporting anything out of the area into other Utah reservoirs. And therefore, our director, Mike Falks, on April 1st, issued this emergency order that put into place this mandatory 30-day dry time for any boat leaving Lake Powell, but also any boat coming from another water infested with quagga mussels, so places like Lake Mead and Lake Havasu. So that went into effect, but then shortly thereafter, 5 days later, Glen Canyon National Recreation Area issued that temporary boat ramp closure at Lake Powell, but there were those 5 days in between where boats were launching but were not inspected on the way out.
Yeah, and by the way, the estimate of the number of boats that were on the water is probably bigger than most people think, but it could be around 1,000 boats that now have not been inspected, and if they're not properly dried. I mean, you and I, we're talking, by the way, and recording this on Thursday, so we had a 4.2 aftershock this morning. We had an earthquake. We're in the middle of the pandemic. We were reporting on an apartment fire, and we had rain, snow, and hail. So I was joking in the newsroom, the only thing we're missing now is a flood, but maybe I shouldn't even say that. So on a day like today, the last thing we need is for quagga mussels to get spread to other waters in the midst of all of this.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we're all struggling right now, just trying to kind of get through this period. And quagga mussels definitely have the ability to completely clog up our water infrastructure and make life very challenging if we can't get water delivered to the Salt Lake Valley. So this isn't something we want to throw on top of everything else that's going on right now.
Yeah, and, you know, fingers crossed that we can get word out, and I know you've been trying to do that with through other avenues, but get word out to the 1,000 boats that were on the water during that five-day period. And we're not just talking, you know, inboards or outboards, but canoes, kayaks, paddleboards, float tubes, trailers and vehicles that go into the water on a boat ramp. All of those things need to be, first of all, inspected. So let's start there and tell people what they should be looking for.
Sure. So we typically preach the message clean, drain, and dry. So whenever you pull your boat or any other equipment out of the water, make sure that you're inspecting for any attached mud or plant or any debris that may have gotten clogged up in the systems. We ask you to remove those. If you have any internal raw water sea strainers, remove those as well. Check those. And then the easiest thing you can do is just drain your boat of all water. So pull those drain plugs in your bilge areas, your live wells. If you have ballast tanks on board, pump those out as much as possible. That will do 90% of the work for you. And then it's always best practice to make sure that anything is dry before you launch it in any other water. That's kind of the last safeguard we're talking here. So clean, drain, dry is typically what we preach to every boater, regardless of where you've been or where you're going to.
Well, I would think right now with the lockdown and the limitations on where you can use your boat, it would be the perfect time really to go through that drying period without feeling it quite as badly.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't want to make life any more difficult than it has to be, but we also need to make sure that as these things are developing, we don't put any of our water bodies at risk. And that dry period is essential to making sure that that happens.
I don't want to put you on the spot, I don't know if you were prepared to talk more about this, but what is the situation at Lake Powell? Has it gotten much worse? Do we know? Is it too early in the season to tell?
In terms of this season, it's too early to tell. I know last season was a challenging one for us, mostly just because the fluctuating water levels in the spring and then again in the fall, it's exposed a lot of live mussels the last few years, and we've had a challenge trying to keep those in check and make sure that those are not on boats leaving the area. And I would suspect that we're probably going to see something like that again this year, but again, it's really hard to tell. Lake Powell is constantly challenging us in ways that we never anticipated.
When we last talked about quagga, along with the bad news, there was also a lot of good news that boaters out there, and my hope would be that all boaters who love a particular water, and obviously they love being out and about, or they wouldn't be spending the monthly payments and insurance on those suckers. But my hope is that there is pretty widespread cooperation through all of this.
I think so, Tim. We've been very pleased with kind of the boater response to the messaging we've put out and what we've asked them to do. We think that kind of that peer pressure, so to speak, of boaters speaking with boaters and kind of watching out for each other, I think that goes a long way. I think boaters understand what we're trying to ask of them. And also what we're asking not only protects the resource, but it protects their equipment in a lot of ways as well.
How is this affecting people that aren't even on the water? Because I've heard people talk about if we get large enough numbers of these quaggas that then die in the sun, that it even messes up the beach areas for barefoot.
Yeah, we've actually started to see that already at Lake Powell the last couple seasons. As the water level drops and those mussels are exposed and dry out, those beaches can become covered pretty significantly with mussel shells. And those are so sharp, you definitely do not want to walk on them. You don't want your dog running through them, your kids stepping on them. So in a lot of cases, those beaches can become almost unusable.
I know part of this press release that I got from Faith Jolly, who does a fantastic job of keeping us informed on what's going on that you guys are working on every day, was that boaters who launched at a Utah water body before the 30-day dry period could be cited. How will you know if that boat was among those that was in the water for 5 days?
That's a great question, and we get that an awful lot. So when those boats are leaving Lake Powell, they are that registration number on that boat, the whole number, it's input into a regional database that we use that's shared by several Western states. And so there is a record of that boat leaving that ramp at Lake Powell at that specific time.
Ah.
And when that boat shows up at a place like Willard Bay,
2 weeks later,
our inspectors there put that registration number into the database and could see where that boat was last used and how long ago that was. So That's how we kind of verify whether a boat is safe to launch or whether they still need to meet an additional dry time period.
Wow. All right, and there might be 1,000 boat owners out there or some kind of floatable device. We could be talking about canoes, kayaks, paddleboards, float tubes, who are on the water. Please pay attention to this. We sure appreciate your time, as always, and all the work that you're doing behind the scenes to try and keep all of our waters still navigable and that we can get out and have a good time on. Nate Owens, our Aquatic Invasive Species Coordinator for the Division of Wildlife Resources. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Tim.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Navidomskus rejoins the program, and we'll have some fish bites for you coming up next.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bubba had a dream, Bubba had a wish, to find himself a woman that loved the fish. One day at the tackle shop, his dream came true, and now for everyone he catches, she catches too. Hey, Bubba!
Hey, Bubba!
Bubba! She fishes better than you.
We've known that. We've known that for a long time.
I miss Russ Quagga Russell saying that, hey, Bubba, this line stuff.
Well, we'll get the bugs worked out of this phone system and be able to have all of us together again, hopefully next week when we get together for another edition of KSL Outdoors Radio. A couple of notes before you tell us about what's going on the river. I posted these pictures on our social media, the Facebook page, KSL Outdoors Radio. There's some photos of some beautiful fish. Biologists down at Minersville Reservoir doing their gill netting. They caught the highest trout numbers they've seen during their annual netting in over a decade.
Good down there, Tim.
Listen to this. The average rainbow trout, almost 2.5 pounds and over 17 inches. That's average.
I know.
And many right now are above that 20-inch mark, which means they're outside the slot. So, and if you want a chance to see it, look on our Facebook page. The other thing I wanted to pass along, and several years ago we got involved with an effort. They were trying to find put some new structure down at Yuba Reservoir. You may remember this. And they were asking people with their old Christmas trees to take them to a certain place and donate them, and then they put them in the water so that the fry would have a place to hide from the predators. And they're doing the same thing right now. Small yellow perch now have places to hide from predators and reach a bigger size after they placed 56 habitat structures in Pineview Reservoir this time. They're in the deep water just south of Cemetery Point, and they're hoping that it will help with the perch population in Pineview in the years to come.
You know, I want to talk Pineview in my little discourse I'm about to give, but I want to go back to when you said outside the slot. That's like a term, baby. That's like off the hook.
Oh, like I sound like I know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, that's hip. You're a hipster outside the slot.
Now if I could just catch fish like you do, I don't have to worry about whether they're under or over the slot limit because I can't catch them the way you do.
I don't worry either because I put them back regardlessly. But I just love that term, outside the slot.
Outside the slot.
Oh, hey, Pineview, Tim. I want to talk about the structures they throw in Pineview. That is phenomenal. Look, Pineview has quietly turned in to a world-class fishery. In the old days when I was a kid, and I know that goes back, way back, it was a trout fishery, and climate was a little colder, and there's springs at the bottom there, and then with the rivers coming in, it was cold enough to really, you know, inhabit a lot of trout, and it was a trout fishery. And then the temperature started to climb, and it was on the cusp with regard to latitude and altitude. And then now we've just gone full-blown warm water fishery. And I know guys that fly in from literally all over this country to come after those tigers. And now that they're going to go full bore and put these structures in there, this is only going to make it better. And by the way, I want to throw that out there. One of the places I had on my list to talk about is Pine View, and the Muskies are starting to show up. So if you're willing to get out there and cruise the banks, don't move it too fast because it's cold and better on sunny days, but you're likely to get a big tiger. I'm going to be up there here this week for sure.
They're in the shallows, aren't they, most of the time? Or...
Right, right.
Yeah.
Those guys are predators. They're after frogs. They're after ducks. I mean, they're after small puppies that fall in the water if you let them.
They're after your index finger, for heaven's sakes.
And when you strip in, right, you pull your rod towards your boat, and that's how you catch them. It's really hard to get them from the shore. You got to throw it from the shore in or to the middle of the lake. When they get to the boat, they're not going to run away. So move your rod back and forth. I've talked about this before. And they'll chase it around in figure eights around your boat until finally they latch onto it. But, yeah, that's one of the places I want to talk about. If you want me to start now, I can give the rest. Yeah,
well, just give me the river because we're short on time.
Well, the river's great. I mean, the river's fishing great. With all this rain, obviously, San Juan worm populations, but really the sow bugs. But let me also throw out there that Lost Creek is ice-free and fishing great, and East Canyon is back to the way it was when we left it in the fall. Big fish, lots of them, you can't miss. Take your family to East Canyon. You're going to catch a lot. And then, of course, I've been fishing the Weber River because it's just walking distance. It's actually, frankly, casting distance from my motorhome. And I've been catching them, like I say, 12 an hour. Sow bugs are still the best. But with the rain and the snow, the San Juan worms will pick up, and so will the golden stones if you're fly fishing.
Yeah. Well, buddy, you got the catch of a lifetime. She's sitting right there next to you. So make sure you take care.
I know.
Make sure that's not a catch and release. And stay safe up there. We'll check in with you next week.
All right. Thanks, Tim. I'm going to have to listen to the show because I'm not on most of it. I want to hear what people say.
All right.
Hackett.
Yeah, we'll get the phones figured out. But, yeah, Tom Hackett, former punter for the University of Utah, and loves the outdoors. He's also part of the group here at KSL. We'll tell you what he's all about. We'll check in with him right after we get you a news update next at the top of the hour.